On the Radar, an Eagle News program that takes you beyond the streets and brings you closer to national and international breaking news as it unfolds. Tune in every Monday to Friday from 1 to 2:30.
Good afternoon, Namibia. It's Tuesday, the 22nd of April, 2025. And just like that, the Easter weekend is officially behind us. We hope it brought you moments of joy, connection, and well-deserved rest. Now, the long weekend might be over, but the energy of a fresh new week is just beginning. Offices are open, classrooms are buzzing again, and across the country, we are all shifting gears back into our regular routines. Now, whether you're returning to your desk, back behind the wheel, or simply catching up on what you missed, today is all about resetting, refocusing, and stepping into the new week with intention. For the parents, we trust the uniforms are ironed, lunchboxes are packed, and those school runs were smooth this morning. And for the professionals out there, remember, pace yourself, hydrate, organize, and take it one task at a time. And of course, if you're driving this afternoon, stay alert on the roads. Safety is always in season, even after the holidays. While we are talking about seasons, here is a timely reminder. Today is World Earth Day. It's a global call to protect our planet, preserve our resources, and reflect on the small daily choices we make that impact the environment. Whether it's recycling, conserving water, or planting something green, let's each do our part today and every day to keep Namibia and the world thriving. Now, as always, On the Radar is right here with you, your trusted companion for real-time stories, thoughtful insights, and everything in between. I'm Dafa Happy Juju, and I've got you covered with the latest from across Namibia and beyond, from social shifts to economic moves, community voices to continental headlines. We're live every weekday from 1300 hours to 1430 right here on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. And hey, this show isn't just about bulletin. It's a conversation. So if you've got thoughts, questions, or even contributions to share, call us on 083-288-401. Would love to hear from you, your first day back and how your first day back has been, or how you're making Earth Day in your home or community. So stay tuned. We're diving into today's top stories next. The Ministry of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform held a strategic planning workshop in Swakopmund Hotel Entertainment Center this morning. Now, speaking at the engagement, Deputy Minister Ruthie Masaki said that the strategic plan for the 2025 to 2030 and the annual work plan for the 2025-2026 financial year must align with the national development priorities under the 6th National Development Plan, also known as NDP-6, but also with the promises made to the people of Namibia through the SWAPO Manifesto and its implementation plan. She said they must further align similarly with the Vision 2030 goals and Namibia's international commitments under Agenda 2063 and the Sustainable Development Goals, also known as SDGs. She further emphasized that these instruments must not be viewed as a routine document. Rather, they are the roadmap for strategic governance, institutional performance, and sectoral transformation. Speaking at the event, she noted out the strategic focus areas, including and are not limited to a few of which I'm going to mention: accelerated capacity building, agricultural productivity, and food nutrition supply, building climate resilience in all sectors, accelerating land reform and equitable land distribution, development of blue economic frameworks that preserve marine ecosystems and driving local economic growth, as well as rural potable water security through expanded boreholes and earth dam networks. These are just some of those that she highlighted. She noted that in the same vein, she wished to emphasize that all public enterprises, commissions, advisory councils and agencies placed under the ministry's portfolio by respective establishing statutes across sectors of agriculture, water and fisheries and land reform are equally expected to undertake a comprehensive review and alignment of their strategic and business plans as well as their budget. She said the alignment must be guided by the ministry's strategic plan for 2025 to 2030, Namibia's sixth national development plan, NDP6, the SWAPO party manifesto and implementation plan, as well as key deliverable interests to the ministry by the president. She noted that it's imperative that these institutions do not operate in solo. Let's now hear from the deputy minister herself.
And the responsibility to stand before you today at the strategic and annual planning workshop, an occasion that defines our direction and our priorities, our impact to the next 5 years. Let me begin by emphasizing the strategic weight of this workshop. Her Excellency Dr. Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwa, the President of the Republic of Namibia, has entrusted us with the minister and by extension, every one of you today. With a secret mandate, our task is not merely administrative, it is a transformational. We are here to shape the strategic plan for 2025 to 2030 and the annual work plan for 2025-2026 financial year, which must align not only with our national development priorities under the sixth national development plan, NDP6, but also with the priorities made to the people of Namibia, with the promise made to the people of Namibia through the SWAPO Party Manifesto and its implementation plan, and by extension, the presidential key deliverable for the ministry, they must further align seemingly with the Vision 2030 goals. And Namibia international commitment under Agenda 2063 and sustainable development goals. Therefore, these instruments must not be viewed as a routine document, rather they are roadmap for strategic governance, institutional performance and sectoral transformation. Director of Ceremony, ladies and gentlemen, our ministry is central to Namibia's socio-economic transformation. We are custodian of four essential sectoral pillars, agriculture, fishery, water, and land reform, each interwoven with the livelihoods, dignity, and prosperity of our people. The deliverable assigned to the ministry by Her Excellency, the President, they are ambitious. They are ambitious, but they are also achievable, provided we make vision with discipline and planning with execution. The strategic focus area includes, but they are not limited, as a related capacity, full operation of the green schemes for increased food production and employment creation, agro-industrial value chain development and capacity enhancement, economic growth and poverty eradication, building a climate resilience in all the sectors, accelerating land reform, enhanced value addition to the marine resources to ensure a significant contribution to the economy, capacity building and access to fishery vessels for Namibian operators. extending water supply infrastructure, including constructions of the second Irongo desalination plant, and improving access to potable water. Sustainable utilization of water resources of the Huangwena Aquifer and Nectar Dam by rural community to extend agricultural production. Rural potable water security through extended borehole and earth dam networks. Each of these areas have allocated to specific directorates within the ministry. And I trust that each of you is well vested in your directorate obligations, which I will share with you separately. You will be extended to lead, to innovate and develop, measurable and transparently measure. In the same vein, I wish to emphasize that all public enterprises, commission, advisory council, and agencies placed under the ministry of this portfolio by respectively establishing status across sectors of agriculture, fishery, water, and land reform are equally expected to undertake a comprehensive review and alignment of their strategic plan and business plan as well as their budget. This alignment must be guided by the Ministry's strategic plan for 2025 to 2030. Namibia's 6th National Development Plan, NDP 6, the SWAPO Party Manifesto and its implementation plan, and the key deliverable entrusted to the Ministry by Her Excellency the President. It is imperative that these institutions solos or pursue fragmented agendas. Instead, their effort must form part of the well-coordinated national push towards sustainable development and inclusive growth. In this regard, I change the Directorate of Planning and Business Development with a central coordinating role. The directorate must actively lead the streamlining of institutional plans.
And now let's pause here for a commercial break, but we're just getting started with News Bulletin right here on the radar. Stay tuned for more news.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. Tensions flared today at Hours Primary School, where concerned community members gathered in a peaceful protest led by activist Sean Gariseb, demanding the removal of the school principal, Tweny Naoyoma. The protest was sparked by allegations that Principal Naoyoma attempted to remove Khoi Khoi Hab, one of Namibia's indigenous languages, from the school's curriculum. Protesters argued that such a move threatens linguistic and cultural preservation in a country known for its diversity. In addition to the language issue, Gariseb raised concerns about unfair recruitment practices and administrative misconduct. Let's now listen furthermore from Sean Gariseb. Good afternoon, Sean Gariseb. It's a pleasure to have you on the Reader News Bulletin.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
I understand that a protest has been, you are leading a protest in demand of the removal of the school principal of Hours Primary School, Tweny Naoyoma. Can you kindly explain to us what actually prompted this march?
Yeah, thank you very much for the opportunity, like I said. The thing is, look, the asking of the removal of the principal emanates from the fact that we established a few weeks ago that complaints that we had gotten from community members and parents was that there was a deliberate erasure of a one class at pre-primary level of Kwekwe Kovap. So, and it was replaced with Oshikwanyama. Mm-hmm. While we, and then we wrote to the director of education where we said that, why is it that a principal is allowed to erase a language? There's no problem with adding another language to erase a language in a predominantly Kwekwe Kovap speaking community. When these kinds of things are done, usually what happens is there is a procedure that must be followed.
Yeah.
There must be a request from parents. There must be a survey. It must be with the knowledge of the board, and so forth. So that procedure was not followed, or at least they could not provide us with that procedure and minutes being followed. So we said, this very principal had done the same thing in Groot Oak, and she had successfully done it using the same modus operandi by saying there are only a certain number of Kwekwe Kovap children. That's why there's a need to minimize the classes and add another class. That's what she did, and she succeeded until the class was brought back by other teachers. So we said it was like raising a red flag that this teacher has done this. So there must be an agenda, because this same thing happened at Moses Garoeb School in 2017-18. And today there is no Kwekwe Kovap. Those teachers that were teaching there today are at home unemployed. So we're saying the teachers need protection. The children need protection. We need protection from our school. And most importantly, the Education Act, and the Constitution and the national language policy is being violated. What is being done about that? That is where we come from, where we said, where we wrote to the director and they said there is an investigation that was launched when we brought these concerns. So when those investigations were launched, we said by the 22nd of April when the school reopens,
yeah,
let the principal be excused while the investigations are ongoing, because there are also various maladministration allegations against the principal. In fact, it is a fact that at our primary school, there is an investigation, ongoing investigation already emanating from 2023, where teachers and certain management, people in management are having a disciplinary hearing about selling and buying of books. So we were saying, just let the teacher excuse herself, because we cannot have children go to a school where there is an intolerant teacher, especially when that is a principal with experience and who's a principal who makes utterances towards children that are condescending. So we're saying let her be excused so that we can be, so that a more tolerant principal can be put at that school, because it is unfair and it is unacceptable that she's allowed to do that. It's very easy at surface level to come and say, no, she never removed Kwekwe Kovap. The language is still there, but it is a systematic thing that is used the country all over. Because in the meantime, in the 2 weeks that we have been, teachers from 7 regions have reached out to us, and they have sent us various documents, proof that they have been writing to the minister, to the EB, which is the current minister now, complaining about the systematic erasure and exclusion of the language. So those are the things that we raised.
Okay. Now, while you speak about they've been writing to the executive director of the Ministry of Education, who is now the minister, I understand that the minister actually did show up at the school. As you raised your concerns to her, what was the resolution, and how did she say she will address the situation?
No, we made it very clear to the minister that we are very concerned that she has been in the system for so long and she's been doing nothing about it, and she knows of these things. We pointed out and told her that we have attached documents that speak to documents written to her. So we expect her to know about what we are talking about, which she does. She acknowledged, she said, she assured us that the investigation is not a lip service story. We said that because we are having concern, the people are complaining, people are only being victimized. She has been sending people to the directors, regional directors, and the regional directors haven't been doing anything. Look, we also made it clear we have nothing personal against Mrs. Nyoma as a principal. It's the conduct of the teacher and the agenda that is there that we have a problem with. And the agenda is clear and it's there. That's why we attached. So she assured us that by 5th, because we gave an ultimatum of the 5th of May, after the 5th, we are going to mobilize a national boycott across the whole country, where we will boycott as teachers, parents, and interest parties of Kwekwe Kovap. So if the concerns are not raised, because teachers from Erongo, South, Ehardap, Karas, all those people have been complaining, saying we are scared to complain, we are being victimized.
Yeah.
We are happy that there is a voice finally that is speaking for us. We let her know that the people are scared. Why is this the case? Why can teachers named freely, because the legal directives of the education in education say that if there is injustice, teachers are allowed to speak out or to report that injustice. So that is a legal provision that is there, that the teachers can raise concerns if there is maladministration or whatever the case may be. So we are happy that the minister accepted our plea in our petition. We made it clear that we had raised concerns in writing, and we bring this petition, and we expect her to take it very seriously. Otherwise, we are going to mobilize for the after the 5th of May, a national boycott.
Mm. Now, what did the principal herself, Twini Noyoma, had to say in regards to all this?
The principal has disappeared since morning time. We have never, we did not see her. Maybe she thought we came peacefully. I don't know why she felt threatened. I don't know the police, but the crowd was so big that she maybe felt that, which I also agree, it was not a good space to be in. So she probably just removed herself. So we were told she was excused.
Mm. Now, lastly, Sean Garisev, what would you say in terms of Khoi Khoikhab as one of Namibia's indigenous languages being as important just as other languages?
Yes, most definitely. The language is very important, and indigenous languages of minorities are supposed to be protected. Article 19 in our Namibian constitution speaks to that. The national language policy speaks to that. The Education Act speaks to that. Indigenous Languages Act speaks to that. There are various legal frameworks that do protect the language, but we are not enjoying the same protection from the Ministry of Education, where the people are looking the other side while there is a deliberate agenda that is very clear. We even put it to the minister that you see what happens is there is this misconception that they say they are not teachers or their children, people are not interested in writing their children in that stream and they prefer English. We are saying even the language policy says that in the first 4 grades, every child must be taught in their mother tongue for them to be able to grasp, understand, interpret and understand things. So we are saying it is also the duty of principals, teachers and all of us as community leaders to encourage parents and raise awareness. We even said that we are going to start a national awareness program where we must raise awareness that parents must be informed to ride their children into those streams and the importance thereof. It's not the parents that are going to school, even if they find it difficult. It's the children. Mm-hmm. So that is what we have an obligation to do that, to protect our language. You must remember, in South Africa, there is a revelation of Khoi Khoikhoi being appreciated, taught in universities, teachers being asked from here. People who are only able to speak the language are being asked to go and teach there. So when we are able to export a language there, when people are trying to appreciate and perpetuate the language there, it's very sad that there is an effort to systematically erase the language here locally. So we have an obligation to protect our language, protect the teachers, and also we also have an obligation to make each other understand, because we must remember we must always respect diversity and not take that for granted, so that we do not come across as being tribal towards each other. You must remember in our areas there are a lot of people who speak all the languages. So these are things that the realities that we must be honest with, and we must look at it, but not one language at the expense of the other. That's unacceptable.
Indeed. Sean Garisev, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Radar News Bulletin.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
We've also tried to reach out to the Minister of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports, Arts and Culture to get her response to the matter, but unfortunately those attempts were not fruitful. But we do acknowledge that she did make her presence during the protest at our primary school this morning. Now, with that being said, you are tuned into On the Radar News Bulletin. We also invite you to partake in the news bulletin, share your contributions, opinions, or perhaps ask a question that is on our studio number 083-288-401. As for now, we pause here and take a trip to the marketplace, but I'll be back with yet more news, so don't press any button.
Mukungu lelewa tuko maikuto wa mina apiri kwa mavucha aziva. Muvele kisema app ato wakasi nchavu kamso. Zakale riferile. Mise kunani zencha. Kuzwa kwa kushimba rifera zari vuka kuya kwa rifasi la rifera fama kepe. Muvone maikuto amancha a imba app. Mwikutwe kulibusi yemba santo ye mwietuna. Mwikole sifera fama kepe marizo hola mina. Hamuvone. Imba encha ni encha farizwe ikopanya mifuta ya rifera matasa app ilini kukopanya naha ni kuhasa nyari njira mlimu. zengwi zef mani hamas fela sesfa app ya imba ze tatama elsin ehangano oshiherero omaemuriro catholic smane kakarunga africans ni zengwi zengata Mulori zeze kacheno, haiva mtavira kulisfera sa kereke ya mina, si ekezwe fa mkoloko walifera za imba, fa 081-2358-063, kapa mlumere imele kwa digital@omalaiti.com. Muzive ni kufumana imba kacheno, mkona kufumana fa App Store ni Google Play Store.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Taking flights has never been easier. Paratus is introducing SkyFi internet packages with speeds that will have you reaching for your seatbelts. Starting from $500, excluding VAT, per month, with speeds reaching up to 10 megabits per second. There's even a prepaid option where you can top up your SkyFi internet for just $15 per gigabyte. No contracts, no fuss. Visit your nearest Paratus branch to find out more. Or go to paratus.africa/Namibia to sign up online.
Welcome back. Now, as you know, Monday's edition of the Villager e-paper is out. Make sure you grab your copy to read up on the stories we covered in it. Now, be on the lookout for Wednesday's edition of the e-paper tomorrow. Do you want to stay ahead of the curve? Well, subscribe to the Eagle Media House WhatsApp channel and receive a tri-weekly dose of economic, social and community news absolutely free of charge straight to your mobile app. Just send a message to 081-200-4144 and never miss an update. Eagle Media House, right here to keep you informed. In other news, the African Pathfinder Leaders Initiative, better known as APLAI, is a youth development organization founded in 2018 with the goal of building a new generation of socially conscious, skilled, and community-rooted leaders in Namibia. The organization targets youth aged 18 to 25 and has over the years created platforms for young people to grow in leadership, governance, entrepreneurship, and civic responsibility. Now, speaking to On The Radar, Loide Fonia Angula, a governance associate at APLAI, say the initiative plays a crucial role in addressing one of Namibia's biggest opportunities, its youth. Let's now hear more from Fonia.
Good afternoon, Fonia Angula, and welcome to On The Radar News Bulletin.
Afternoon, happy. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Now, I understand that the African Pathfinder Leaders Initiative held its first residential program for the year over the Easter weekend. Can you kindly walk us through what the African Pathfinder Leaders Initiative is and what it is all about?
Okay, so the African Pathfinders Leaders Initiative, we usually call it APLAI for short, mm-hmm. is a youth developmental program founded by Namibians for the Namibian youth. APLAI's model focuses on three different areas they wish to upskill the youth with. That is the area of entrepreneurship, the area of community development, mm-hmm. and the area of personal development, coach and co-leadership. So basically, the founders took the models that are usually run for these big programs, the likes of Mandela Washington Fellowship, YALI, and so forth all over the world, and basically designed to equip or want to help the youth, which is of the target group 18 to 25, just to equip them with skills that are necessary for either their startup business models, Some of them are involved in community projects, so for community development, and just give them the head start and the necessary knowledge and skills that could help them reach whatever potential businesses or community goals that they have, or just to take up leadership roles to better empower them and facilitate basically their agenda in the communities or the businesses that they deal with.
Mm. Now, I see that Apply's focus is mostly on youth empowerment. Now, why is it important to empower the youth with skills, and what type of skills are needed by the Namibian youth?
So, there's a reason why we took those key focus areas, because we find that, especially for the youth, they have so many ideas and they have so many zeal or potential that most ordinarily would not have access to or would not have time to just implement. For, like we mentioned, for areas of entrepreneurship, most people have this grand idea, this grand plan, or maybe have already started on it, but they don't have, and remember, these are youth you're dealing with, so they don't have the experience of the your normal 30 or 40-year-old business mm-hmm. man or woman. So it's always good to try to equip and try to, empower and give the necessary skills, give them access to the necessary platforms, give them the necessary connections, to just try to also, from their part, to try to reach these goals as well. Part of our, that also meets with the SDG goals, and also to facilitate, I think, mostly these Vision 2030s and the national goals of just trying to create employment, try to create empowerment. But that is just one of them. We also then see that for those that want to venture into basically social economic goals, to either, what is it, empower or upgrade their communities, to work with them, and basically to do better for where they come from, we also then help facilitate that. And we've seen a very good turnover, with the fellows that we've had in the past, and of what they've been able to do.
Mm. Now, Fonia, with the rise of technology and digital innovation, what is Apply incorporating in terms of digital or technology-based skills into your training?
Well, we have what we call residential programs, like you've mentioned, this past long weekend was one of them. And we have various over the course of the year as well. Now, in our residential programs, we have different sessions and different facilitators that come to give sessions towards these fellows. Now, most of them focus on the different areas that I already mentioned, but even for one of our fellowship programs now, we had a session on just technological initiatives. Mm-hmm. We have a fellow that's also dealing with that, mm-hmm. With the likes of AI developmental programs as well. We give them access to people or that have the expertise in the field to just facilitate and also teach them the knowledge and the skills when it comes to technology, AI, even the likes of blockchain and whatnot. And our speakers are mostly local professionals, but we also extend all the way to South Africa, Tanzania, America. So they get access to a lot of professionals that also, some of them deal with now the likes of things related to technology and AI and just the latest inventions as well.
Mm. And Fonia, how do you balance practical skills development with character building elements, for instance, like confidence, ethics, and community engagement?
Wonderful. So, how do we balance it? That is a little bit of a tough one. We don't necessarily try to balance it, but we do make sure that we incorporate both of that in our model.
Mm.
So where we usually will give people skills and knowledge for, look, this is how to be a better leader. This is how to empower. This is how to mobilize people. This is how you do project management. But at the same time, we are also we try to focus on self-conscious, because in Apply, we believe that you as an individual or as a person, have to be at your best in order for you to also be able to give out the best for either your business or your community or whatever leadership roles we have. So we also then have sessions on psychological development, personal development, the likes of this weekend. I think we had the pleasure of having the qualified industrial psychologist, Mr. Siegfried Lunde, published author of maybe about 5 books also. So they get to facilitate these sessions on emotional debt, on how to deal with this, certain scenarios and the life challenges. So we incorporate that, not necessarily that we balance it, but we make sure to give them the best that we can, that so they can learn to manage both themselves in their own capacity and also their professional capacity for whatever it is that they're pursuing in life, whether it's leadership, whether it's business, or whether it's NGO-related community development.
Mm. What criteria do you use to pick your fellows or those that will benefit from Apply's training leadership? And then another question that I wanted to also include in this is that, is it a once-off training?
Well, that is a good one. The team really sits and struggles to pick the fellows. Last year we've had the biggest application so far, reaching almost 200 applications. And the criteria that we choose is for inclusivity. So you won't always find top of the range. Maybe it's because you're the best academic or you're the most qualified, but it depends on the type of project you're running. We try to keep a balance on people that have NGOs, on people that have businesses, on people that have leadership roles. We try to also have inclusivity on the areas where the people are from. So we have fellows from different regions as well, from all the way from the south, all the way central, down the north. So those are the factors that we take into account when we choose the candidates. But we usually require that they already have a startup or a project that they're running within the community. And sometimes, even if that is not the case, is if the fellow can show us that they have an idea that they want to develop into a business, into a community project, and that idea has potential, and, you know, they just have to motivate as to how they would like to reach that, and then we facilitate and assist them into reaching that goal throughout the course of the year.
Yeah.
Primarily, we have 3 residential programs for each cohort. That is one usually towards the beginning of the year, or another one in the middle, and then the fellows graduate at the end of the year. And throughout these residential programs, we offer all different skills, sessions that facilitate for all these different skills. We not only do it once off, because most people, when they attend an event, even if it's for a week long, they take little notes, they put it in their notebook, and sometimes it's most often forgotten about until maybe a person revives. But our model gives the skills or the training in the beginning. We have monitoring and evaluation throughout the course of the year. The reports have to be submitted and just to track the progress of the fellows. And then we equip them with more skills towards the middle and keep them accountable for these actions. And we find that our model mostly works better, because then we are with the fellows throughout the course of the year. And yes, we don't necessarily have the biggest numbers of fellows, so we don't deal with 100 fellows or 50 fellows. We try to take a smaller group so that the impact is really qualitative and not just the quantities or the numbers that we work with.
Mm.
Yes.
Okay. That sounds very interesting. And it's a wonderful thing to actually hear that it is by the Namibians and for the Namibians. Fonia, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader News Bulletin.
Thank you for having me, Happy.
Okay.
Now, the news never stops, and neither do we right here on the Reader News Bulletin on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. We are committed to keeping you informed and in on the loop at all times. But for now, let's take a quick visit to the marketplace.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Onkundana ombwanawa kani hauto. Owapumbwa oshimaliwa meendelelo. Ndele ouna oshiendiso. Ouna aniilonga yapumbwa okufutwa. Ashike mboka yina oondjodhoye otayeende kashona. Ngele onkalamwenyo otayi nyengana, AutoCash otayi ningi ompu. Tu etela ohauto yoye, eto pewa epresenda 45% dongushu yoshiendiso shoye. Mule ashike, wimintetilo 45%. Ino pumbwa oka payslip nenge o statement ayombanga. Ohauto yoye ashike. Mona omula, oshimaliwa ethimbo weshipumbwa.
Easy money!
Tu dengera nena ko nora hamano yume, ne nora nora hamano heari hamano. Ano, ko nora hamano yume, ne nora nora hamano heari hamano. Oshipulera ko AutoCash.
Welcome back. Now for other news. President Duma Boko of Botswana has officially launched a national housing initiative that will see the construction of 3,000 homes in its initial phase. Now, part of a broader and transformative plan to deliver 100,000 housing units over the next 24 months. Speaking at the project's unveiling, President Boko highlighted that the initiative is about more than just providing shelter. It's a bold step toward giving every Botswana citizen the opportunity to own property and participate meaningfully in the country's economic growth. Now, the project aims to ensure that by its completion, at least 100,000 individuals or households will either have obtained or be on the path to acquiring title deeds to real property, a key milestone in addressing inequality and enabling generational economic empowerment. President Boko stressed that housing is not merely a basic need, but a foundation for sustainable development. He reaffirmed his administration's commitment to closing the housing gap and unlocking inclusive growth across Botswana. Let's take a listen to that.
We are here today with a deep sense of pride and responsibility to launch this project, this segment of a larger and unfolding narrative of 100,000 houses. We begin with the first 3,000 that we are going to deliver in 24 months maximum. Here, and you all bear witness to this commencement. We want to afford every citizen not just shelter, but an opportunity to own real property. This is not just a project to build houses and provide shelter in the short term. It is the beginning of one of the most ambitious projects of wealth transfer ever undertaken in this country. At the end of this project, at least 100,000 individuals and or households must have title or be in the process of working towards the acquisition of title to real property, a house. Very, very important. Wealth, democratization of wealth. We want people to access a decent livelihood. We are about human rights. All my life I've fought for human rights, animated by the appreciation that these rights are not given by me. The natural law theorists tell us that these rights flow from God himself. So if they were not given by me, they're not even given by the Constitution, by the way. Make no mistake. The Constitution doesn't confer. It recognizes rights that pre-exist, predate the Constitution itself. And the Constitution is valid only to the degree that it fully recognizes and promotes the enjoyment of these rights. So they are not given by me. Don't thank me when your rights are realized. It's not a favor that I extend. It is an obligation. I have to discharge this obligation if I'm serious about the assignment that you've given me. There's a vision. There's a reality, the current reality. When I taught law, I taught an aspect of law. They call it jurisprudence. You know, where you go crazy. You venture into different realms of thought. They trained me that there's something, the is proposition and the ought proposition. Is and ought. Is describes where we are, the current reality of landlessness, homelessness, poverty, unemployment, low wages, lack of access to investable resources, lack of opportunities for people to earn livelihoods. That is the is proposition. That's where we are. Where ought we to be as a nation? We ought to be in a place where the majority, if not all of our people, have access to decent housing, own property, have a decent livelihood. That is where we ought to be. That's the vision. It is clear. It is precise. But this vision is not self-executing. It doesn't realize itself. You don't state it and then it happens. It now depends on agency, human agents. Who are the people to realize and deliver this vision? What are the institutions that must take us there? When I studied, they called it structural ambition. We need to reflect on the current institutions and practices. We want to deliver 100,000 houses. How many have we delivered in the past? What has impeded the delivery? Maybe the methods, the approaches, the thought patterns that we employed were not properly suited to the attainment of the ought proposition. So we need to change how we do things and realize the ambition are compressed in time. We must deliver them in the shortest possible time. And I've said 3 years. Ramogapi says 2. Sets himself a very bold.
And there you had it. For now, let's take a pause and take a trip to the marketplace. When we do return, we'll be bringing you economic indicators.
Mukungu lele kwa tuko maikuto wami na apiri kwa mavuchaziva. Uvele kisema app ato kasi nchavu kamso. Zakale liferile. Mise kunani zencha. Kuzwa kwa kushimba lifera zari vuka kuya kwa lifasi la lifera fama kepe. Muvone maikuto amancha a imba app. Mwikutwe kulibusie mba santo ye mwietuna. Mwikole sifera fama kepe marizo hola mina. Hamuvone. Imba encha ni encha farizwe ikopanya mifuta ya lifera matasa app ilini kukopanya naha ni kuhasa nyali njila mlimu. Zengwi zefu mani hamasifera sesifa app ya imba kize tatama. Elsin, ehangano, oshiherero, omaemuriro, Catholic, simane kakarunga, Africans, ni zengwi zengata. Mululi zeze kachenu, haiva mtavira kulisifera sa kereke ya mina, si ekezwe fa mkoloko walifera za imba, fa 081-2358-063, kapa mlumere imele kwa digital@omalite.com. Muzive ni kufumana imba kachenu, mkona kufumana fa App Store ni Google Play Store.
Welcome back, and now for some economic indicators. On agricultural commodities, the top commodity losers are cheese at negative 4.46% and rubber at negative 2.07%. Gains are led by palm oil at 1.07% and soybeans at 0.78%. On metal commodities, the top commodity losers are steel rebar at minus 1.28% and lithium carbonate at minus 0.64%. Gains are led by gold at 1.07% and platinum at 0.56%. On energy commodities, the top commodity gainers are crude oil, WTI, at 1.48%, Brent crude oil at 1.36%, and natural gas at 1.11%. Now, bonds update, Swaziland 10-year bond yield drops by 12 basis points. The government bonds yield remain mixed on Tuesday, with the top losers being Swaziland's 10-year bond. Luxembourg's unemployment rate remains steady at 5.9% in March 2025, marking the fifth consecutive month at this level. The number of unemployed persons rose by 52 from the previous month to 18,760, while domestic employment increased by 531,000. Now, meanwhile, the number of Luxembourg citizens active in the labor force grew by 34 to 316,581. Now, Georgia producer inflation slows to a one-year low. Producer prices in Georgia rose by 5.5% year-on-year in March 2025. That is slowing from a 6.1% decrease in the previous month. Now, this marked the lowest producer inflation since March 2024, as prices moderated for all sub-indices, namely mining and quarrying, at 22.3% versus 30.1% in February. Manufacturing came in at 4.3% versus 4.5%. Now, electricity, gas, steam, and air conditioning supply was at 6.6% versus 6.8%. And water supply, sewage, waste management, and remediation services at 1.8% versus 2.5%. On a monthly basis, producer prices increased by 0.7% in March, following a 0.3% gain in the previous period. And that's what we had for you today on economic, on trading economics, on what's happening currently in that regard. For now, we're taking a short trip to the marketplace, but don't go anyway. And when we do return, we'll be bringing you news beyond the borders. Remember, you are also welcome to partake in the news bulletin right here on the radar. Dial in our studio number on 083-288-401.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Zakale liferire mise kunani zencha kuzwa kwa kushimba lifera zalivuka kuya kwa lifasi la lifera fama kepe muvone maikuto amancha a imba ep mwikutwe kulimusie mba santo ye mwituna mwikole sfera fama kepe marizo hola mina hamuvone imba encha ni encha farizwe ikopanya mifuta ya lifera matasa ep ilimi kukopanya naha ni kuhasa nyali zira mlimu Zengwi, Zef Mani Hamas Fera Sesfa Ep Ya Imba, Ize Tatama, Elsin, Ehangano, Oshiherero, Omaemuriro, Catholic, Smane Kakarunga, Africans, Nizengwi Zengata. Mululi Zeze Kachenu, Haiva Mtavera Kurisfera Sakireke Yamina, Si Ekezwe Fam Koloko Walifera Za Imba, Va 081-2358-063, Kapa mulumere imele kwa digital@omalite.com. Muzive ni kufumana imba kachenu. Mugona kufumana kwa App Store ni Google Play Store.
Welcome back, and now we take you to News Beyond the Borders. We always start off regionally, and then we move to continental news. Thereafter, we move to international news. Now we're starting off in South Africa, where DA and EFF takes VAT hike battle to court.
To this story, the Western Cape High Court is set to hear arguments today on why Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana should be interdicted from implementing a VAT increase. The Democratic Alliance, with the support from the Economic Freedom Fighters, will argue that the minister's announcement of a VAT hike to 15.5% from the 1st of May is unconstitutional. They contend that the process through which Parliament adopted the fiscal framework was flawed and chaotic. The parties maintain that the power to impose taxes lies with Parliament, not the minister. Minister Godongwana is opposing the application, arguing that it lacks a legal merit. He says that a failing to raise a VAT would result in a significant gap between government and revenue, between government revenue and expenditure. The DA and the EFF are asking the court to refer the fiscal framework back to Parliament before the VAT increase takes effect. Well, to unpack the court papers and what's expected in today's proceedings, we are now joined by Newsroom Africa's Kanita Hunter. Kanita, very good morning to you. So there is the political field and then there's the legal field. So let's deal with what's happening in the legal field. The minister, of course, opposing this application that has been brought by the Democratic Alliance. And what is the Democratic Alliance saying about what this case is not about?
Yeah, so the Democratic Alliance says this is not them asking the court to adjudicate whether VAT increase or taxes are good or not for South Africa and whether or not South Africa needs it or not. They said that's not what they are going to the Western High Court to adjudicate on. What they are saying is that we are here to challenge a process which they claim is completely and utterly unconstitutional. Now, we have to go back to that meeting of the Finance Committee that discussed it, and there was the process in which the fiscal framework was discussed. The question is whether that amendment that was not actually an amendment about whether VAT would be reconsidered.
The recommendation.
The Democratic Alliance telling the court that there's no such, and that the minister cannot impose taxes by himself, and that it is actually Parliament that would have had to voted firstly in that committee on that report and then taken it into the House of Parliament to vote. Now, it's a procedural matter that they say is unconstitutional, but they said the first part of it is that they have to interdict the minister from raising VAT on the 1st of May. Now, a bone of contention, Aldrin, is the argument of the Democratic Alliance that once a VAT increase imposed, it is irreversible. And that is supported by the Economic Freedom Fighters in their intervening application to say it's no such thing that the minister can then come back and say, well, it's off the table. And when you look closely at the minister's papers, Aldrin, he says that the DA says in their replying affidavit that there's no way that the minister denies in his affidavit to the court that the VAT hike, once in effect, would be reversible. Mm-hmm. And so that's an interesting one. The minister in his papers says that he has the powers, that the process was completely above board. And quite interestingly, he calls the Democratic Alliance opportunistic. He argues that the DA is trying to argue in the courts a case that it lost in the legislature.
Yeah, and here's the thing is, once again, the minister has mentioned this before, that the DA was willing to support a VAT increase on the basis if there are certain concessions that the ANC, the Government of National Unity, is willing to make. But that's not part of the contention here. The issue is the VAT increase, the process that was followed by the Finance Committee, and also looking at the constitutionality of a Section 7 of the VAT Act.
Absolutely. And so the minister points to that. He also seeks to downplay the consequences of the VAT increase on the price of food and the poor, saying consistently that if this increase is not effected, there will be this disjuncture and this misalignment, as the minister says, between revenue collected and the expenses of the state. And so the minister you know, sticking to it, saying that, you know, the VAT increase is needs to be effected. And so that's a very different assertion from what was the process in Parliament, because the, in that committee, the assumption was that the fiscal framework will be passed. The minister will then find a way to plug in that 13 billion rand shortfall and then come up with the solution. That's not how the minister looks at it. He looks at it and says, you know, this is what we need.
Yeah.
And referring to his speech, his contentious speech in Parliament, where he says he justified the need for a VAT increase. Again, the Democratic Alliance says to the court that this is not about what the government needs or not. This is not whether a tax hike is the only way.
Now, in other news, South Sudan said to send delegates to the U.S. in an effort to appease tensions.
South Sudan has announced it would send a delegation to the United States in an effort to appease the relations between the two countries after the U.S. cancelled all visas for South Sudanese nationals. In a statement shared on X, the South Sudan government said the delegation will aim to address the repatriation of 137 South Sudanese nationals currently subject to deportation orders from the U.S. Tension arose after a man named Makula Kintu, an alleged Congolese deportee, was denied entry at Juba International Airport. The man had been expelled from the U.S. on April 5. Washington had accused Juba of refusing to take in its own citizens. South Sudanese authorities have since allowed Kintu to enter the country, but the incident has caused a crisis with the U.S. According to the American Secretary of State, Mark Rutte, the matter is a question of national security and public safety. The South Sudanese delegation will aim to ensure an orderly, legal, and dignified repatriation process. Whether or not this initiative will help restore trust between the two countries remains to be seen.
Meanwhile, Kenyan President William Ruto heads to China for a state visit.
China and Kenya established diplomatic relations in 1963. During the colonial era, China supported Kenya's struggle for independence. The two countries emphasized principles of sovereignty, mutual respect, and non-interference in domestic affairs, which promoted mutual understanding. 60 years on, the relations have transformed and evolved into a comprehensive strategic partnership.
The people-to-people relationship between Kenya and China goes beyond our bilateral relations. Bilateral relations starts from the 60s. But the people-to-people relations is 600 years old, when the first Chinese visited Kenya.
Key projects like the Standard Gauge Railway, built under China's Belt and Road Initiative, have reduced cargo transit times, increased trade between Kenya and neighboring nations, and boosted tourism in the country. The 27-kilometer elevated Nairobi Expressway, built by the China Road and Bridge Corporation, has reduced travel time between Kenya's Jomo Kenyatta International Airport, the Nairobi Central Business District, and some key suburbs of the Kenyan capital. In the agricultural sector, Kenya has emerged as one of the top suppliers of avocados to China, capitalizing on a rapidly growing demand. This expanded market has empowered many Kenyan farmers through increased earnings. In 2019, Kenya was granted enhanced market access to China, a move that boosted the flour export sector. For many flour farmers, the expanded access into the Chinese market has facilitated easier trade routes and reduced barriers, giving the horticultural sector a timely boost. In education, China has established the Confucius Institute at the University of Nairobi, promoting the learning of the Chinese language by many Kenyans and facilitating cultural exchanges.
I am looking forward to building on what already exists, to build greater understanding between our two peoples and ensuring that we take this into the future.
President William Ruto's visit to China is expected to further cement China's role as Kenya's leading trading partner. Daniel Arap Moi, CGTN, Nairobi, Kenya.
mounting concerns over rising cholera cases in Sudan's capital.
To our correspondent Naba Muhideen in Port Sudan. Naba, so once again, a cholera outbreak has struck parts of Sudan. How bad is the situation?
Actually, Beatrice, the situation right now is worrying and bad. Despite that, the cases are lower than the outbreak in last year when it started in the first week. But also, it concerning because the situation in Khartoum generally and the health services have totally collapsed due to the war. So the situation is bad, and the volunteers are urging people to use boiled water because there is suspects that Sudanese people in different war zones, not only in El Kalakla, but in different war zones that affected by the deteriorated services and affected by the destruction of water plants are using contaminated water. So there is risk of higher figures and numbers of people who are affected by cholera. In El Kalakla local team, Jabal Awliya, south of Khartoum, the situation is bad. The volunteers are worrying because the cases are increasing every day, and there is also concerns that it will spread further, especially in Jabal Awliya, which is not far from White Nile. White Nile is one of the biggest outbreaks, biggest points and outbreaks starts from White Nile and then affects Khartoum. So the situation is bad, and volunteers are calling on the authorities, health authorities, and volunteers and NGOs to provide a sanitation system, to provide people with necessary health needs, and also they are raising awareness against cholera, so they need urgent intervention by the authorities and NGOs to contain the situation, because if it is spreading in Khartoum, that means that it will, of course, hit many, many states, and it's expected because rainy season is about to start, so cholera would be one of the biggest threats for the Sudanese people and the health system in the country.
Dangote refinery cuts petrol prices across Nigeria twice in 1 week.
Well, let's move on. The Dangote refinery is now beginning to play a central role in the pricing of petrol in Nigeria. In just 1 week, the privately owned refinery has reduced the ex-depot price of petrol twice. Now, the current price is now 835 naira per liter, which is around 52 US cents. Some industry experts say the refinery's pricing strategy is a calculated effort to gain market share and to also undercut imported fuel and apply downward pressure on domestic fuel prices. Well, CGTN's Deji Bademosi brings us the details from Lagos.
For consumers like Tokunbo Everett, the reduction in petrol price by the Dangote refinery could not be coming at a better time. At a time when his income has been badly eroded by rising inflation, the reduction in the price of petrol means he can still continue to put his car on the road every day.
The only challenge we have is that, please, government regulatory body should please press it upon the marketers to reflect the price. You know, every time Dangote reduces the price, only few of them will reflect it.
Not all the oil marketers actually buy petrol from Dangote. A sizable amount of the petrol consumed in the country is still imported, as local refineries, including the Dangote refinery, are yet to meet local consumption with their production. But there's no question that the price reductions by the Dangote refinery is putting pressure on imported petrol.
I think primarily it's lower crude prices. If your cost is reduced, you generally want to pass that on. But that's together with competition. A number of people are still importing finished products, and he wants to remain competitive. I think it could also be a trade war of sort, or fighting over consumers.
The price reduction is also coming at a time when the government announced the renewal of its Naira for crude deal with the Dangote refinery.
If Dangote has to fast fetch for dollar also to compete to get FS and then bring it into them, you would have seen that we wouldn't enjoy what we are enjoying now. So basically what is happening now, as long as the price of crude oil goes down, international market, definitely the price of refined petroleum product will go down.
But while the petrol price drop is good news for consumers, the government is seriously worried about the fall in crude oil price.
So happy, of course, as consumers of the derivatives of crude price in that the price is coming low. But when you look at globally as a nation, it's not good for our economy because our revenue inflow is also impacted. If the crude oil price, like what happened previous week, Fridays ago, where it dropped in one day from about $74, $73 a barrel to $60, you can see that in terms of our production of crude oil, our revenue is impacted severely.
If global crude prices continue to remain low, there's a likelihood of more price reduction in the coming weeks. And that's what Nigerians like Everett want to see. For now, they worry less about the impact lower crude prices could have on the economy. Deji Bademasi, CGTN, Lagos, Nigeria.
Meanwhile, the African Space Agency launches operations in Cairo.
African Union adopted a continental space policy and strategy. The Africa Space Agency inaugurated its headquarters in the Egyptian capital, Cairo, on Sunday. With this step, the AFSA can finally pursue its mission to harness space science and technology for Africa's socioeconomic development and sustainable development goals.
African ministers, as well as directors of continental and international space agencies, came to the Egyptian space city to celebrate this landmark step for Africa. All of them pledged to support Africa's space ambitions. The European Space Agency marked this historic day by signing several cooperation agreements with the world's newest continental space agency.
The mission of the Africa Space Agency is to collaborate all the space programs in Africa, being it space exploration, Earth observation, astronomy, satellite communications. It's an already existing framework from the African Union, but it has now established on its own. So it's not going to start its work. Its work has already started.
The space industry is financially demanding and requires sophisticated technology to run. For Africa, that's still a major challenge. One of the roles of the African Space Agency is to coordinate efforts by national space agencies to complement Africa's space research and capacity building efforts.
We have 54 African nations. All the nations cannot invest heavily in the space sector because investment in space is very, very capital intensive. Coming together in a union like this is the best way to go. Africa is massive landmass. The only way you can manage the resources of Africa and then the diversity of Africa is to use space science and technology. No other means upon which we can do this thing.
China is expected to be one of the main global partners of the African Space Agency. The Egyptian space city has a strong foundation of Chinese space technology, which empowered Egypt with a satellite assembly integration and testing center, as well as expanded the country's remote sensing abilities and space images analysis.
It's quite interesting when you are in space. Most of the geopolitical zones or political is totally different. When you look at the International Space Station, you have all the nations coming together, especially the Americans, the Russians, the Chinese. The role of the China supporting the Egyptian Space Agency and supporting the African Space Agency is a role that is well welcome and is an example for others to follow.
By hosting the African Space Agency, Egypt is solidifying its leadership role in Africa's space ecosystem. It is a commitment from the North African country to nurture space research, technology development, and innovation across the continent. AFSA is not expected to build rocket ships and send humans to space, but will instead focus on Earth observation, satellite communication, navigation and positioning, as well as other space sciences and astronomy. Adel Mahoui, CGTN, Cairo.
Chefs unite in Algeria for cultural culinary festival.
In Algiers, the aroma of diplomacy is seasoned with saffron, cumin, and a whole lot of heart. At the Culinary Art Festival, chefs from 14 countries gather to stir pots, fold dough, and forge friendships through food. One of the stars in this kitchen constellation is Algerian chef Mohamed Challah, who is giving a traditional twist to a splash of the sea.
I am preparing a corn couscous with seafood. It is a typical Algerian dish. That's from the mountain and this from the sea.
It is a dish that bridges land and sea, and it is as much a feast for the eyes as it is for the taste buds. From the high tides to the highlands, tradition takes center stage with Chef Tosme Gates Shakshuka, a humble but hearty dish from Biskra.
I am preparing a shakshuka of Biskra, a city in Algeria. It is a humble dish, but in Biskra we like to honor our guests and we prepare it with meat and chicken.
In Biskra, hospitality isn't just a custom. It is served by the plateful seasoned with pride and care. And while the chefs whisked and chopped, judges tasted not just food, but culture itself.
Integrating the cultures of participating countries and getting to know their dishes and heritage is happening spontaneously. We test and get to know the points of agreement between them and establishing the culture of the host countries, like Algeria, praise God, with its ancient dishes and food. When the participants come, they get to know its nature and their achievements.
And the menu didn't stop at savory. A sweet note awaited on the other side of the festival grounds. From flaky Algerian baklava to Syrian sweets filled with pistachios, dessert was a bridge between cultures.
We wanted to exchange experiences between Syrian and Algerian cuisines and to introduce Algerians to Syrian heritage, desserts and cooking, and to get to know Algerian desserts and heritage in full, and to also get to know the desserts and heritage of other countries and share our knowledge together.
At this culinary festival, every plate told a story. Every flavor forged a new friendship, proving once again that the shortest road to the heart is through the stomach. Ian Kinyo, CGTN.
China showcases robotics innovation in world's first 21-kilometer race with robot runners.
Meet Caspoda C, a humanoid robot turning pace for a big race, led by robotics engineers, has been out on the road for testing.
Our robot for this marathon is Caspot SE, right here beside me. He is about 1.6 meters tall and weighs around 40 kilograms. His design is very human-like, especially his long legs. His gait is one of our signature features, and he can walk at speeds of up to 5 kilometers per hour.
To prepare for the long-distance challenge, the team made some key upgrades.
We never run tests over such a long distance in the lab, so we equipped him with a quick swap battery system to ensure he has the stamina to finish the race.
It's not just Caspot SC. Another model named Caspot No. 1, which just came out last November, is heading for large-scale production.
Compared to the SE, Caspot 1 has more agile upper limbs and is capable of voice interaction. It's designed for industrial use, where it can handle simple, repetitive tasks.
China's robotics industry has seen rapid growth over the past 2 years, fueled by technologies like 5G and advanced AI. A recent report released at the China Humanoid Robot Industry Conference predicts that China's humanoid robot market will soon reach 8.2 billion yuan, or over 1.1 billion US dollars, accounting for half of the global share. Ms. Zhang, the company's COO, is optimistic about the market's momentum.
The pace of development is incredibly fast, and we are seeing a flourishing ecosystem. Every company is leveraging their accumulated expertise and exploring commercial applications in different scenarios.
But as a burgeoning sector, humanoid robotics still faces key technical challenges. Wang says stability is the next thing to overcome.
Robotics is still a young industry, and many things are just getting off the ground. Hardware stability is still a challenge. Our control units and motors are developed in-house, so we often encounter hardware issues. On the software side, we need to keep training our models to enhance stability.
A marathon for robots offers an arena for innovators to showcase their developments, and also a window for the public to know more about our human-like friends.
For us, one immediate benefit is visibility. We've had many potential partners who were previously unfamiliar with humanoid or embodied robots reach out to us to collaborate. The exposure draws attention to our field, opening doors for new opportunities while also raising the bar for our technology and products.
And with that spotlight comes responsibility. As Zhang puts it, the goal is to create smarter, more accessible robots, ones that can truly serve in everyday environments from factories to communities. Chen Xuedi, CGTN.
Farmers challenge John Deere's control over equipment repair.
On a farm scattered across two Missouri counties.
I've been farming my entire life.
Jared Wilson is harvesting corn and soybeans.
Particularly for soybeans, I mean, we're always fighting to get the crop out before bad weather sets in.
But these days, the fifth generation farmer is battling more than weather. His biggest challenge? The right to repair his own farming equipment when it breaks.
This is a problem that is affecting every class of electronic device, from your washing machine to your car to me with my combines and tractors.
Wilson is among hundreds of farmers across the country named in class action lawsuits against John Deere. They're accusing the company of blocking farmers and everyday mechanics from fixing equipment without going through John Deere dealers.
Would you say time means money?
Time absolutely means money in this business. And so while waiting on them, I had soybeans that, pods that were splitting open and my product was falling on the ground, right? I can't recover that.
I'm coming up, Jared.
Climb into the combine and you'll find the crux of the controversy. Farmers say this screen controls nearly everything inside. When there's an issue, a code flashes. But according to the lawsuit, only Deere authorized technicians can access the software and tools needed to diagnose and repair. Farmers and independent mechanics are locked out.
Even if I identify what the problem is here and I replace it, I still don't have the technology to plug in to the diagnostic port on this machine and put the software on that it needs to complete the repair.
And Wilson says the wait to get a John Deere technician can take weeks, and he eats the cost.
How much money have you lost waiting on John Deere?
I personally have lost, I would say, several hundred thousand dollars.
Deere has rejected the claims made in those lawsuits, but the court denied their attempt to dismiss the case. And in January, the Federal Trade Commission sued John Deere over what it called a use of, quote, unlawful business practices that have driven up repair costs for farmers while also depriving them of the ability to make timely repairs. Lena Kahn is the former FTC chair who helped file the suit.
I would have sometimes farmers, you know, close to tears recalling the time when they lost a whole harvest because they weren't able to fix their own tractor.
Kahn says if companies control who can repair equipment, industries from automotive to healthcare could pay the price.
Illegal restrictions on people's ability to repair their own product is affecting people across the board.
In a statement responding to the FTC case, which is still pending, John Deere said it does have a, quote, long-standing commitment to customer self-repair, and that the complaint is, quote, based on flagrant misrepresentations of the facts. The company told NBC News it does plan to improve the repair software it offers to customers in an annual subscription by this fall. But the farmers and farmer advocates we spoke to have doubts.
They've promised to make the tools available, but haven't done it.
Willie Cade, grandson of a former John Deere engineer, is pushing for states to implement laws protecting farmers' repair rights. So far, Colorado is the only state to pass one. 18 states have introduced similar agricultural laws this year.
How close do you think you are to the finish line?
5 years away, before farmers actually will be able to fix their own equipment.
Wilson, who rode tractors before he could spell his name, says that wait may cost him more than a season's harvest. He fears it could end his family's 100-year farming legacy.
I have the fruits of my labor deteriorating out in the field. The frustration of that, I'd rather give up my farm than have someone dictate those terms to me.
Adrian Broaddus, NBC News.
Thanks for watching. Stay updated about breaking news and top stories.
Drugs giant Roche pledges $50 billion US dollars investment.
Drugs giant Roche said Tuesday it would invest $50 billion in the US over the next 5 years. It's one of the biggest such moves made by major companies as they grapple with Donald Trump's sweeping global tariffs. The Swiss firm said the move would create more than 12,000 jobs, including nearly 6,500 during construction. Though medicines are currently exempt from Trump's tariffs, that could soon change.
And all I have to do is impose a tariff. The more, the faster they move in.
The threat has makers scrambling to announce investments to counter Trump's tariffs, which he says are intended to boost domestic output of pharmaceuticals. Roche says its investment will include new research facilities and expanded manufacturing in locations including Indiana, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, and California. Once all that comes online, the firm says it will export more drugs from the US than it imports. Chief Executive Thomas Schinecker said the investment underscored Roche's commitment to the country, where it already employs 25,000 people. It all follows an earlier pledge by Swiss rival Novartis to invest $23 billion in the US.
And all this brings us to the conclusion of today's On the Radar News Bulletin. To stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengue program brought to you by David Shombe, and thereafter the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut at 16:30. Now from Indafa, Happy Juju, it is goodbye and have yourself a wonderful day ahead.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than The Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Mukongolele kwa tuko maikuto amina apili kwa mafuchaziva. Mwele kusema app ato lokasi nchavu kamso, zakale liferile, mise kunani zencha. Kuzwa kwa kushimba lifera zari vuka, kuya kwa lifasi la lifera fama kepe. Muvone maikuto amancha a imba app, mwikutwe kulibusi ya mbasa antoye mwietuna. Mwikole sifera fama kepe, marizo hola mina. Hamuvone, imba encha ni encha farizwe ikopanya mifuta ya lifera matasa app ilini, kukopanya naha ni kuhasa nyalizwi la mlimu. Zengwi, zefu mani hamasifera sesifa app ya imba, ize tatama Elsin, Ehangano, Oshiherero, Omaemuriro, Catholic, Smane Kakarunga, Africans, Nizengwi Zengata. Muluri zeze kachenu, haiva mtavira kulisifera sa kireke ya mina, si ekezwe fa mkoloko walifera za imba, fa 081-235-8063, kapa mulumere imele kwa digital@omalighty.com. Muzive ni kufumana imba kachenu, mkona kufumana fa App Store ni Google Play Store.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than The Villager newspaper. The Villager is an...